All smiles tonight then, isn't it? Tonight we have two former players in to give us some real cutting-edge insight, and the lads go and do that. I'm Stephen Goldsmith with Gareth Barker here, and we're joined by Michael Proctor, who's used to all his radio stuff by now, Michael, aren't you?
Absolutely.
Walking the park.
Getting an old hand
expert.
At this.
Expert.
Well, I wouldn't say an expert, but
well, we'll see. Delighted to see Julio Arca is here too. Apologies we have you in after such a rotten result, Julio. We'll try not to send you home too depressed.
I'll do my best. Thanks for having me here anyway.
No, it's no problem. Glad to have you in. Right. This, Gareth, like tragic world events, is a case of being able to see where were you when we lost 8-0 at Southampton, I think, do you? Did you try that new pub out? Is that why you watched
it? I went into the new pub, yeah, and it kept on flickering off during the first half.
That was a sign.
It did come back on in time for Virginie's sort of Ronaldinho-esque sort of like studded sort of swinging finish. And then I went home at half time and watched the rest there.
Right, I was going to say, so you can't even blame the pub for it.
I could.
Would you be superstitious and not go back there and watch it again?
I wouldn't go back there for the match, but not
because of that. I've got a mate who's really,
not because of that.
Really superstitious like that. If you lose certain games at a pub, you wouldn't go back there.
I didn't hear your point yet blaming a pub in fence houses on the result, to be fair.
Well, no.
Stop revealing where my local pub is, Mike.
Sorry.
What are you doing?
Yeah. Well, it's because his fan club turns up.
It's happened before. That's why I had to move.
Right, okay. Well, Michael asked me earlier what was on the agenda. Now, I've been looking forward to having you to win so we could get some insight from you, as I've just said. And we like to really analyse games. And you know, 8-0, Michael, can you take anything from that, really?
I don't think you can really do a great deal of analysis other than to say that it was one of those freak results that you
Well, you hope so, don't you?
Well, yeah. I think I can't see it happening again this season or any time in the near future. It is one of those freak results where everything goes against your team, and by the look of it, everything went for Southampton, from referees' decisions to, you know, balls breaking straight to them, and just one of those days, I think. But that's not to say that there's no blame to be placed anywhere or anything like that, but I just think a little bit of misfortune coupled with a bad performance from 1-11,
yeah,
really, which again is a rare thing. It's not very often that you see a full team not performing to anywhere near the levels that they're capable of. So I'd be very, very surprised if we saw anything similar to that.
Well, I mean, we want to treat this game in isolation. 7 goals in 7 games before, and then we concede more in one game. So you would hope,
yeah,
you would hope it was that. Julio, do you think it's a case of where Sunderland are as a team, each player needs to be practically at 100% or 80, 90%, and if everybody drops below that, you're always in danger something like this might happen? Maybe not this bad, but
I mean, listen to the manager the other day after the game. I think it's a wake up for the majority of the players. You know, when things like that happen, you need to put yourself right and obviously make sure it doesn't happen again. As Michael said, you know, it's probably, well, I'm sure things like that happen only once. Well, that's what we hope. And it's a bad performance, you know, and obviously Southampton was too good and Sunderland was too bad, so it's nothing you can do about it. And when things don't go in your way, then like the penalty and all that we're talking about, it could change again around. But it wasn't a good day, and obviously Sunderland paid the consequences.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the penalty there, and people might think we're clutching at straws there, but do we get a penalty at 2-0 and they possibly go down with 10 men? That changes, doesn't it? That changes the game totally, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you listen to Poyet after the game and he didn't really offer that as an excuse. He came out first and foremost and blamed the players, which rightly so. That's where the blame should lie. But as you say, if the penalty's given, you'd expect us to score it. That brings the game back to 2-1. There's a possibility the keeper might get sent off, although I'm not sure it was sending off. I don't think Fletcher was probably going to get to the ball. But you've seen them given. You've seen goalkeepers sent off before for things like that. I've seen defenders sent off for less than that. So again, it's one of those things that's gone against us. But from there, those decisions go against you, then you don't crumble. That's about character. It's about, you know, these things happen in football. Things go against you 10, 20, 30 times in a game. You can't just capitulate because something happens against you. But yes, the game would have been different had the penalty been given. Is that an excuse? Certainly not.
Shall we have a listen to hear what Gus said after that game then? You mentioned him now, so we might as well listen to this now. Here was Gus. Thanks to BBC for this.
I told you in the past in football, decisions, key decisions, they set up the rest. Me, second half,
I'm going to be honest, I learned more in the second half today than in the whole of last year. I know a lot. I know characters, I know reactions. I know people that I can count in difficult moments and people I won't be able to count on. And that is very important for me.
But you can't really change much at the moment. I mean, you haven't got the personnel, have you?
I'm a head coach. I don't make the squad. So that's not my job. I go four defenders, I play what I got. So the rest, I'm sorry, I'm not going to start putting excuses or taking responsibilities. They are not mine. I accept this. It was me. I picked the team. I put it on the pitch. It's my responsibility. Until then, I take it. The rest, I'm sorry, I'm not going to take anyone.
People are interpreting that differently, Gareth, interpreting that differently. How do you take that?
Well, it doesn't sound very good. I mean, he did something similar after the Tottenham game last year. Now, that can be... what he's saying can be interpreted in two ways. He shouldn't be saying what he's saying, by the way, because he's putting pressure on people around him, and it's a bit unfair because they haven't got a right to reply in the same environment that he has.
I don't think that's a time and place to bring Lee Congdon.
Lee Congdon hasn't got... Lee Congdon hasn't, in the heat of that defeat, he can't come out and do a post-match interview and defend his selection of players or reveal the conversations that were had between the manager and himself about the players that they were signing, their strategy for the window, and it's up to them to know who let who down, if that's the way they feel. And that's not fair on Congdon and to put him in that position.
The club won't want that public eye,
no,
will they?
Obviously not. But what I would say is, people saying about Poyet absolving himself responsibility, I don't think that's the case. And I didn't think it was the case when he did it last time, because what he's actually saying is that he wants all of the responsibility. And that's what he's complaining about. He's not saying, you know, he's not saying, I don't want the responsibility of that those decisions. He's saying he is wants the responsibility of those decisions. But, you know, he's signed a new contract under the conditions that, you know, he is the head coach and there is a director of football. And sometimes he can get a bit vocal when he's lost a game badly. And that's just because people hurt and after they've been beaten so heavily, if you're that embarrassed. But
it's an argument for a different day, though, Michael, that, isn't it?
I think so. I think, as Gareth said, I think the biggest problem is that those things should be kept internal. If there's an issue between the director of football and the manager, then as a fan, I'd like to see that be kept private, because all it does is just generate speculation that isn't helpful. What we want to be doing is supporting the team. We want to see the team performing well, and any sort of infighting, anything like that, it isn't beneficial for anyone at the club. The players, the manager, Lee Congdon, for no one. So I'd like to see those conversations kept private.
He isn't blameless either, because, you know, to be fair, there's no argument. Should he have put Liam Bridcut right back, for example, when you have someone like Seb Larsson, who perhaps has played there before? Or you could look at the fact he took Seb Larsson off when he's one of the players who will close down all day. Even though he might not have his best game, that is one thing he'll do, isn't it? Try and close people down. Adam Johnson went on centre midfield, I believe, when he went on.
Well, there was a point where Buckley was playing up front and Wickham and Fletcher were like playing behind him. It was just strange. Like, that was weird, but I think he was just trying to like change. But at that point...
So the blame spread around, isn't it?
But that was at 4-0, and you're thinking at 4-0, I don't know how you guys would feel as ex-professionals, but surely there comes a point where you think, we're away from home, 60 minutes, we're 4-0 down, let's just... get out.
You were about this earlier, Michael.
Let's just get out and go home and like write it off as a bad job.
Yeah, well, that's normally what happens when you're losing, you know, especially conceding 3 or 4 goals, then you try to obviously get stronger on the back, and you know it's going to hard to turn the game around. So you're trying to concede as less as you can. If it's 4-0, it's 4-0, you know, you don't want to concede more. But, I mean, the blame, I think everyone has to take the blame. You just can't blame the manager or one or two players. It's squad. When we're winning or when the team is winning, everyone gets obviously the benefit of the win. And then when you lose, everyone loses, you know. So that's
we together lose together. And
exactly.
All.
Yeah, that's absolutely. The way it is at the moment.
Absolutely. And I think what Julio said there, yeah, me and you spoke about it earlier, Stephen. If you are losing 4-5-0, then that's it. You shut up shop. You get 11 men behind the ball and
Let's
you don't concede anymore.
Yeah.
I remember it happened a couple of years ago when United beat Arsenal 8-2 and the media went mad, and you had the likes of Gary Neville on Sky saying in that sort of match you need your big players, your experienced players, to say, right, that's it, we
write this off as a game.
Let's just shut up shop, the game's finished now, we don't want this to snowball and become embarrassing, which is what it did do. And then that then affects the rest of your season sort of thing. It affects the mood around the club, it affects the mood around the city. So I would have liked to have seen somebody on the pitch, or whether it comes from Poyet or one of his coaching staff, I'd like to see someone say, listen, we're not trying to score any goals here. Whether or not we get a consolation goal or not is irrelevant. We don't concede anymore. So Wickham comes back into the midfield, Fletcher comes back into the midfield, whoever it is, and we pack the midfield, we pack our defence, and we don't concede anymore.
I mean, he's created pressure on the back four as well by bringing on Bridcut at half time. I mean, I don't know, did Brown go off because he was injured?
We don't know. I don't think.
Did he just take him off from a tactical perspective? Well, like you're saying, there was probably better options at right back. I mean, personally, I thought in the first half, at points, actually played okay. And they created quite a few chances. Like, we probably created as many chances as Southampton did, but I mean, we chucked two of the three in the first half. So you look at that and you think, I think the only player really who I would have changed at half time, I would have taken off Buckley and brought Johnson on, because Buckley was really awful and he's been pretty good. So I would have just taken him out and kept it the same, because you make that change at right back, you put pressure on the back four. I thought he'd gone to the back three maybe and was going to like put like Bridcut and Cattermole in front and maybe give the players in front of them a bit more opportunity to express themselves and maybe stay solid and try and get something on the break and get back in the game. But I mean, they actually kept it. It was only about, did they keep it about 60 minutes till the fourth one went in?
Oh, God, I don't
think
know.
They did,
my head's been in the sand since
it was
the
only,
end of,
it was only after that. It was only after that when they really just completely capitulated.
It was when the fourth one in was.
Well, I think Boyer was, I mean, knowing him, I think he's clever enough to sing that way. They probably were getting beat 3 or 4 nil, and I'm sure he told the players, you know, that's it, we close the door now, or we try. And obviously in the end, then they did not concede another 2 or 3, so that was probably the most disappointing thing in the game.
I mean, both you lads, now I'm sorry for this, because this wasn't a setup. Do you know what I mean? When news were coming on, we didn't think we'd play like this, but you've both played in the struggling Sunderland sides. Julio's played in two of four sides. Michael just played one, didn't he, in the 19.1. Now, some of the goals we give away, the first one, where Brown's give the ball away, the second one, Buckley's give the ball away, Larson's turned his back on it, it's hit off his back, and those are the kind of goals you give away when you're playing in struggling sides, because everybody's confidence is low, right? So that makes it more bizarre, doesn't it, that sort of happened, really.
I think especially after the last couple of performances that we've had, Swansea and Stoke, I thought we did excellent.
Discipline's been one of our main
We've spoken about it on the strength. Podcasts in the past this season. We've said that the back four look relatively solid, the goalkeepers look pretty solid, but again, it goes back to the initial point that I made. It's just all of these factors working against you all in one game, and everything, literally everything that could go wrong went wrong in one game. But as you say, you don't expect that from a team who are sitting mid-table, who've just come off the back of two very, very good performances, who don't look like they're a side struggling for confidence, albeit in front of goal, possibly a little bit a lack of confidence, but certainly not at the back. And for that to happen at this point in the season, after the two games that we've had, it really is a bizarre result.
I mean, Julio's, the way I've just mentioned Buckley and Brown there, the way they give the ball away, it was like sort of reflective of a side that a drawn 0-0 at Stamford Bridge in the last minute or something, and the panicking about holding on for a result. Not in the game. I'm not going to say easy, because Southampton are a great team, but in a game that didn't seem to have much pressure attached to it.
Well, I think it's nothing to do with confidence. I mean, like Michael said, you know, they've been playing well, not conceding many goals.
That's what I mean. So
they've been solid, not scoring probably enough, but you know, they've been doing okay. So it's just a strange thing that happened in football. And, you know, it can happen to anything. It happened to Arsenal. It's one of the best teams in Europe. So, and it happened to Sunderland now. But, they didn't keep the ball well. And obviously that made the team look worse, you know, when they give the ball away all the time, conceding many goals, own goals. So that was probably a mix of everything just going wrong for the team.
Hmm. I mean, the own goals were inexplicable, really. Set the tone for the game, didn't they? I mean, Virginie's was kind of,
it was incredible.
For 5 minutes, I was just sitting thinking, well, like, has he just done that?
Is that? I mean, I know we'll come on to it, but own goals in games and sort of freakish situations. I mean, sometimes teams concede own goals, and obviously Michael, you played in the game where we conceded three own goals in 7 minutes. And, you know, Virginie to score an own goal in that manner, like, what does that do? I mean, I know people say professional footballers should be mentally strong, but what does that do to you for that? For a while, like, how long does it take you to mentally recover from that moment? Because I don't understand when someone smashes a ball into their own net from 25 yards, practically, how
well,
he can.
I don't think many people would understand that. To be
exactly,
fair.
But as a player, I just don't understand, like, how long does it take you to mentally recover from that moment? Because I would imagine that's pretty difficult.
I mean, listen, as Stephen said, it's a bit of a freak sort of thing that I'll come on the show. That this is a bit, feels like a bit of a stitch up. This.
Yeah, but it wasn't.
But yeah,
it's been prepared.
But the Charlton game, I have to say that's probably the lowest I've ever felt in my life, let alone my career. It was, you know, that was a real freak game in the same sort of manner as this. As you mentioned, it was a team that were lacking in confidence and sort of that obviously made things even worse. But as for recovering from it, then I think. Whether or not you do recover from it, but it certainly for me, it made me a lot stronger. And it's how you respond to that, I think. I remember the next game, Howard Wilkinson actually called me up at home and had a chat with him, and he got me in his office before the next game and sort of said, you know, don't worry about it, you're going to be playing, and like. And explained that he felt the fans would be behind me, and to be fair, I got an incredible reception in the next game, which meant the world to me. But I think from my point of view, the fans knowing that it would hurt me as well. I'm a Sunderland fan, been a Sunderland fan all my life, and playing for Sunderland, it meant so much to me. So for that to happen to me, it was sort of like a double kick.
Karma done you that day. Because to be fair, like we were saying earlier, I mean, your own goal is kicked because you were getting back, helping the defence out. Now, you could have, Gareth said to me earlier, he could have just stood with his hands on his hips on the halfway line and not bothered yourself, and that wouldn't have happened. And it's a bit harsh the way it's happened, isn't
it? I think that's why, sort of, as I said, the next game and for the rest of that season, really, the fans were always fantastic with me because they knew that I cared, they knew that it mattered to me, they knew that I was hurting the same way that they were hurting. And that's not just from because I'm a local lad, I know people like, we've got Julio in here today, but, and Julio still lives in the area, he still, you know, he still loves the club, he, you know, we had Bawley in the studio on the last podcast, and Bawley's from the other end of the country, and he sort of, you know, he loves the club as well. So for, I think when fans see people that care on the pitch and they see people that are trying hard and they're doing the best that they possibly can for the club, then they get behind the players. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to think that's what I did for the time that I was at the club. I always give 100%, I was trying my best, and that did hurt, but the reaction that I got from the fans, that helped me to get through that time. Mm-hmm. So you'd like to think that the fans would get behind the players after this, whether or not the players... Well, whether or not it looked as if they cared, I know that's been an accusation I've seen thrown around a lot this week.
Fans like to say that about players, don't they? You know, it's an easy thing for fans to say, oh, the players don't care. I can't believe that's true.
Well, I think it is an easy thing to say, and especially with the sort of salaries that that the players are paid these days.
And you might get the extreme case where it is true, but collectively,
it is an easy thing to accuse players of, and especially in the wake of a result like this. But from my experience, I'd say 99% of players that I've played with, you know, they care. They play football because they love the game. They want to win games because they're competitive, and they'll probably want to beat the kids in the garden if they're playing footy in the garden. I know that's certainly how I am.
So you're two-foot and tackle your kids, is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. It's the only way they learn, isn't it? but yeah, do I think that the players care? Absolutely. Do I think that they're hurting this week, that they're ashamed? Absolutely. But then the proof of the pudding is how to perform in the next game, how they perform for the rest of the season. And I'm sure Julio will agree with that, because he was always a player that sort of wore his heart in his sleeve, and that always gave 100%.
I mean, Julio fans, like we're saying, just following on from that, it means that much to a fan, a son, especially up here, and they will go to work the next week, and a result like this will spoil their week. Now, that's got to be for the same for the players, right? What do you, the next day, do you struggle to sleep and stuff when you have results like this?
Well, you're definitely not having a good night after the game. You know, if you get beat 8-0, you know, any game you lose, you're not having a good night. That's the way I used to take it. You know, it's always nice to go back home, have a glass of wine with your missus or with family, knowing that you won the game. And you know, every player care. That's the way it is in football. You know, I understand fans get angry, upset. Everyone supports Sander get upset. But the players care. They want you to play football. They want to be in the team. And as much as they do well, the more chances they're gonna have to get in the team or to move somewhere else and play in a bigger team. So it's disappointing to obviously hear fans saying that, but you know, it's their opinion. You know, you have to listen to everyone, and that's the way it is. You know.
Yeah. Oh no. More sensible fans don't think like that. You just get the small minority, well, you know, the vocal minority.
You know, the emotion and passion works exactly. Both ways. You know, it's. You know, like Michael said, in this situation, he felt great when they came out and did that, and that is probably because, I mean, me and you have probably been in that situation where you've gone to Sunderland as a kid and you've watched, and you'd love to be the, you know, you'd love to be the...
I would have loved to score a winner against Liverpool.
Yeah. That's what you dream about, and, you know, and that's probably why, you know, when in that situation, the supporters get behind Michael, because he understood that they, you know, to a man or a woman, like, that's probably what they would dream about when they went to bed at night when they were kids, and he was in that situation. So, you know, it works both ways. I mean, I don't think I've criticised supporters for certain things and stuff, but it's difficult.
It's
I think
a few generally, isn't
yeah,
it?
I think it's difficult to think rationally, isn't it, when you've been tonked 8-0. But I mean, you look at the fans who are at the game, and there's videos going around. You know, the 8-0 down, and they're singing their hearts out till the end. Because
I was just about to make that same point. There, I've seen the fans towards the final whistle, and you would think that we were winning 8-0, and that's the sort of support that Sunderland have. That's why we're Sunderland supporters, because we share that same passion. So I'd like to think, and I would imagine that the atmosphere on Saturday, yes, people are disappointed, yes, people are frustrated, but I'm sure that the fans will be supportive as ever on Saturday, and they're desperate for us to get a result, so that we can forget about this, and so that Newcastle fans are not leaving boxes of after 8 mints on people's desks.
Well, it's about time that's something to laugh at us about, isn't it? They've
had their fair share. Well, we'll give them the moment.
But you know, mention about reacting in certain ways. Now, Liam Bridcut, you know, I'm not going to say I feel sorry for him, but it's going to be a test of his character now, isn't he? Because I feel sorry for him in the sense that he was playing out of position. He was right back. He's one of the lads who scores an own goal, which, you know, he isn't. Sunderland fans aren't necessarily warming to him, rightly or wrongly, because he isn't that a sort of impact player. We've discussed this before, but that's the last thing he needed personally, isn't it?
Yeah, I think as you say, I do feel a little bit sorry for him, because he's not really had the game time that he would like this year because of Lee Cattenwell's form. He isn't really the type of player that catches the eye, because he's not combative like Cattenwell is, so he's not flying into tackles and getting fans off the seats. He's not an exciting type of player. He's just steady away, and he's quite efficient. He keeps the ball, wins the ball back, but as you said, he doesn't really catch the eye. So,
and then he gets shifted out of position.
Then he gets thrown on at right back in a game where you're really not really got a chance,
especially when, you know, they're fullbacks and wide players like to go at you as well, don't they?
And difficult for him, and obviously the own goal won't help his situation, it won't help his confidence, but he does seem quite a confident lad, and he does know that defensive midfield position inside out, and this season he's sort of been used as a backup for Cattenwell, so you never know. At times, we know how Cattenwell is with suspensions, things like that, we might need him. So again, I think it's important that as fans we get behind him, I've heard Poyet speaking, and I know Poyet speaks highly of him. So I'm sure he'll be getting the support internally at the club. But his performances have got to be better with everyone. We keep talking about Sunderland fans being great fans and sort of getting behind the team. But at times the players have got to give something back, and the players have got to sometimes get the fans up. It's not just a one-way thing. Yes, it's great when the fans are behind you. Yes, it's great when the fans are acting as a 12th man. But sometimes it's the players' responsibility to get the fans to that stage where they are off the feet, where they are shouting and screaming and cheering you on. And that's what I'd like to see happen on Saturday. And I think the first 10 minutes on Saturday are going to be vital, because fans are going to be expecting to see a reaction. Poyet's going to be expecting to see a reaction. And if it doesn't happen, then that's when we sort of could be in trouble, I think. But I think that first 10 minutes against Arsenal on Saturday is going to be vital.
Can you? And if you remember games as bad as this as players, Julio, did you have any?
Oh, yeah. Any? I was involved in a game. I got beat
8-1.
8-1. In Argentina, I was the teenager to play before I came to Sunderland. And it was slightly different because we were doing well. We played really well the first half, I remember. We only getting beat 1-0, and then we got a man sent off, and then they scored another goal. So it was 2-0 halftime, and then in the second half we just collapsed. But the slightly different was we had the fans waiting for us outside for 2 hours. Have a go at us. When here, obviously, you're going to see the fans on Saturday, and I'm sure they're going to be there supporting the team. Probably got 40,000 there or more, probably. And as Michael says, massive gain. But Sunderland seems to do well against big teams, and that's what probably happened Saturday. Probably, Sunderland perform really well and get a point or three, so hopefully that's what happened.
Expect a reaction, Gareth?
I was just going to say, were you involved in the Borough when they beat Man City 8?
I was involved in the winning side.
Yeah, exactly. So you've seen both
sides.
And Man City have done all right since.
Yeah, they've reacted quite well.
Slightly.
Since
We just need a shake to come in and take over, and everything will be all right.
But you can't tell when the team, when you're playing against team, obviously it happened to me 8-0, and you can't tell when the team is giving up. I mean, it was after 3 or 4-0, and you can't tell it was an easy game to play. Anyone could have played there because they give up. And that's what probably happened in Sunderland, losing 4-5, and you think, oh God, I can't wait to finish the game, and obviously then it's considered another three and make it all worse.
I think they had Stu Pease as their manager then, and he's not somebody.
No, it was Ericsson, wasn't it?
Oh, was it?
Yes, okay. I think he was.
I was going to say Stu Pease isn't the person you'd want to go in. Dressing room
if you're going to get beaten on the last day of the season 8-1, Sven was probably on the beach 2 months before that, so no wonder they got beat.
He doesn't raise his voice,
literally on the beach.
They're probably aware of that fact. He doesn't raise his voice.
But I was thinking about this the other day, and I'm not blaming him.
Who? Sven?
Gomez.
All right.
But if you look at Gomez, now I haven't checked this out, but I'm pretty sure, obviously, 8-0 on Saturday, surely he would have been in the side that got beaten 9-1 at Tottenham and 8-0 by Chelsea.
Probably.
So it's his fault, Gareth.
That's quite interesting, isn't it?
That's the curse, yeah.
He doesn't go drinking in that unlucky pub that you go in, does he?
He might do, right? Well, I haven't seen him. He might as well have been on Saturday. But no, I think that can't be a very pleasant thing to carry around with you, that you've been beaten 8 clear goals in 3 Premier League games.
No, it's not nice. It's never nice when you get beat like that.
I don't think as a fan, what's worse as a fan, you're going to remember. I remember Julio might have played when we were decent side under Reid. And we went to Ipswich and lost 5-0. And they were bottom of the league at the time.
Panini George.
That was hard to take as a fan. I think I left at half time, to be honest.
I remember it wasn't a heavy defeat. The worst I've ever felt after a game, I think, was...
apart from the Newcastle defeats, obviously.
Yeah, it was a 15-point season. And it was the West Brom game. When Gary Breen scored after about 6 minutes. And then we kind of hung on a bit.
It was
Gira, but there was camera for them. I remember went through, and I think he had one. It was Hoyt headed one off the line in the last minute, and it went for a corner. And the corner came in, and Gira scored the header. I honestly can't ever remember because
Dean Whitehead who scored a penalty for us.
I think it was Breen. I can't remember which game was it. Breen scored it early. We scored some early goals.
I tried to forget about that season.
We scored some early goals in that season, and then went on and. No, it was the Whitehead penalty one. Was the Portsmouth 4-1? I'm pretty sure.
That was a momentum thing though, Julio, wasn't it? Because the first 6-7 games Sunderland played all right, and they just could. I remember West Ham at home when we drew, and we absolutely battered them. And we went to Borough and won, and we didn't look that bad. And then suddenly you're just getting to a loser mentality.
I mean, with that squad and the actual squad now is.
Oh yeah.
We didn't have the standard of play they have now, the amount of play they have now. I know. Probably Sunderland or the manager is looking to have a bigger squad than what they have at the moment. But it's two different things, the lads, I remember they used to work hard. I mean, since obviously it went totally wrong, but they were trying, and that's what the fans, Sunderland fans, like to see players trying, even if you get beat, they're trying to see, they like to see players
working
hard.
The fans wait for the players outside the games in Argentina, if they're putting the
season
in
a nice way.
I think that was the thing about that defeat, is because don't think we'd won a game in God knows how long. It probably was the Middlesbrough game, the one before that West Brom game. and then last minute equaliser, so that's a monkey still on the back. And then a few weeks later, I think it was Everton at home on New Year's Day, and we'd done pretty well, and then last minute Tim Cahill scores a header, and that you're in the same
that's
position.
When things go against you, you know, no matter how prepared, you know, when, you know, obviously you perform and you're trying to perform as well as you can, but then you kind of carry that unlucky thing with you all the way through, you know.
It's happened with Derby as well in their season. Remember, they had a few like that where they looked as though they were finally going to get a win or a result, and then the last minute of the game they concede, and it's just a like the mentality thing. It's like once you've gone.
QBR possibly this season.
Could ground. Be. Hopefully. They played well as well yesterday.
We're going to stop talking about that now. Stop that now. We're going to come back and we're going to talk to Julio for 10 minutes. Okay, we're going to spend 10 minutes or so now, I think, just talking to Julio. It'll be a shame to get him in. Well, and Michael as well. We're not going to just ignore him.
Well, we're sick of sight of him now. Every week.
Can I switch my mic off?
Well, we can always do that if you want to be a spectator. What I like, Julio, I want Gareth to tell you a little sort of story now. Gareth's wife knows nothing about football, but tell him the conversation we had the other day. I think it was quite interesting.
Well, what it was, when he used to listen to more games on the radio... and he used to listen to every Sunderland game, the away games on the radio, and I didn't go to the away games. And she always used to be
like...
It
was when we were rubbish, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was when we were rubbish, pretty much. So when you guys were playing... she always used to say, all you ever hear is Julio Arga, Julio Arga, Julio Arga. So she knows who you are via the...
She doesn't know any football, but she knows who you are. You must have been involved on the radio.
Yeah, involved on the ball so much. Yeah, that you always getting mentioned. So she recognises yourself through that. She probably wouldn't know if you saw on the street.
She recognised my name.
But so, going back to when you first...
It wasn't as good a story as the other night, was it?
I think it's okay. It's passable, isn't it?
It's okay.
Passable. That's worthy, yeah. Going back to when you first signed Julio, though, because what were your impressions of the area? Because it isn't, you know, that common for maybe Latin players to come over and settle so well, especially in the northeast. Because we were just talking when the mics were off there about Vargas, who chose to go to QPR over Sunderland because it's London, and that seems to be such an obvious decision for players to make it. You found yourself, even after Sunderland, at Middlesbrough in the North East still.
Well, I came here, I remember coming here for a week just to see the place before I signed the contract. And
did you go to Pizarro's nightclub?
Well, I didn't have a chance to go in that week. But I never saw anything wrong in the place, you know. Nice place, you have the sea. They took me around the city. It's just a normal city, you know. And I find myself comfortable here. That's obviously why I stay so long. The funny thing is that when you listen players coming from London and they say they feel homesick and all that, you know, I'm just laughing. You know, it happened to me. I know when I say names, but it happened to me when I was in Misru. And just players complaining about that, and when they're only 3 or 4 hours away, you know, I'm in the other side of the world, and you have to get used to. So, I mean, the place is nice, you know. As I said before, I enjoy living here. I've been enjoying my time here, and it's a similar place to the one I'm coming from.
Were you all drinking partners when you did or not?
Mate, I was always good mates with Julio. I was going well with him. I wouldn't say drinking partners because me and Julio are model professionals.
I've seen Julio out in town a few times. Definitely.
The thing is,
when he first came over, Sunderland had a decent nightlife then because the economy was quite good, wasn't it?
It used to be a lot better now.
Yeah, and then it's crashed now, hasn't it?
Yeah. Obviously, when Julio first came, I think, you know, there was a lot of excitement about, you know, the fact that you'd come over because, you know, you're Argentinian, so it's the glam. There is an element of glamour to it. Something different. It's not something you wouldn't.
Second Argentinian.
Yeah, you wouldn't. It's not you. You know, you weren't the type of player that you'd expect to get, and you were young, and it was exciting. And then obviously you scored on your debut, didn't you, at West Ham? Was that right?
No, was it was here, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, West Ham. Yeah, it was against West Ham, but yeah. And I think after that, everyone obviously took you to heart, so that must have helped you settle in.
Yeah, it was good at that point, obviously, when I made my debut, which was a week or two after I signed my contract. So best way to start, obviously, my career in Sunderland was that, you know, playing the first game, scoring at home, in front of 48,000. But I think it was about half and half of the fans, you know, thinking, you know, who the hell is that guy we paid 3.5 million, you know? And the other fans were like...
Cheap, that, wasn't it? Cheap
for you. The other fans were thinking, oh, well, he might be good. So it was a bit of half, you know. But luckily it went well, especially the first season. You know, we done well. We finished 7 again in the league. I play, you know, quite a few games, and I did well. So basically, I made my base in there. The connection with the fans was good as well. So everything went pretty well the first season.
How was your English though when you came?
It was rubbish.
So could you understand what Peter Reid was saying to you when he spoke?
No, not really.
Can you understand now?
Well, I think that.
So how did
I do now?
How did he sell the club to you though? If you couldn't understand what he was saying.
Well, obviously, I remember having a couple of the lads used to speak Spanish. Stefan Suarez was there. Used to speak Spanish. Emerson Tom was there. So they kind of helped me out, obviously through meetings and all that. I mean, inside the field, you don't need to understand. Yeah. It's only one language, you know. But afterwards, they kind of helped me out a little bit. So. But it was hard. I still find it hard to understand Bobby Saxton, you know what I mean? So,
I used to struggle with Bobby Saxton.
But they used to treat me well, you know. They used to look after myself, so it was good.
What do you think was the change? Because, you know, you were at Sunderland. You weren't there the first 7th place finish. You came in the 2nd. So you finished 7th, though, and then obviously the following season was difficult. Finished 17th, didn't we?
Yeah.
And then obviously the relegation.
We'd have went down if it wasn't for Claudio
for Reina, yeah,
season,
probably.
Yeah.
What do you think was the? What do you think was the turning point in why it sort of deteriorated? Because we had a decent squad even when we went down in that 90-point season. We had some
squad,
decent players.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just what do you think? Because as you were there for pretty much the whole period of that, probably our best period in the last 50 years or whatever. What do you think it was that changed that made it go sour?
I want to think that probably we spend money in players that we didn't have to spend money. Maybe that was the case. We have a good team, as you say, you know, the squad's fantastic squad, you know, plenty of options around the whole team. I remember we lost Don Hutchinson. He was one of our main players, you know.
Yeah.
And he was good, and I saw Sunderland should have put an effort to keep him at the club, you know, for another year or two.
We all do.
That was a disappointing thing for us to lose in a good player. Then Queenie, he was, you know, having problems more often with his back, so we started to lose Queenie as well. And then I think the French guy came, Lillian.
Yeah.
And he didn't do, obviously, what Queenie was doing. So slowly the team started to deteriorate. And obviously, after 2 seasons, we pay the consequences, you know. Even with a good team, but we pay the consequences, you know.
Because it just shows you that, you know, someone like Quinn, you know, that thing, that was the thing where you're trying to replace him rather than say, well, we're not going to be able to, you move on and try something different, and they never.
Well, I think they tried to replace him with Torre on the floor.
Yeah.
That was probably. But I don't think it worked out. I mean, Torre on the floor was a good player, but no Quinnie. And I think fans were expecting to see another Queenie.
Yeah.
And it's hard to replace, you know, players like Queenie,
and
Kevin
Flo
Phillips.
And Flo was at a side previously where they played football and he probably got the ball on the feet a lot more. And we've tried to replicate how we played under Queenie.
I think
Flo
was probably the right player at the wrong time. He was, as Julio said, technically great footballer, more than capable of scoring goals. But to come and replace Niall Quinn, you're fighting a losing battle from the off there. And the style of football didn't really change, despite the fact that there was somebody totally different, a totally different style of player up there.
I mean, was that difficult? Actually, Mike, was that difficult for you? Because
I was going to say it was a bittersweet you
because
in,
you,
in
you
a
know,
way, because you've been waiting for your chance.
Yeah, you wait, and then it's like, oh,
then you're thrown into the deep end of a team that's playing rubbish.
Also, the pressure of it, you know, not replacing Phillips, replacing Quinn. You're a striker, a young striker who scored a lot of goals for the reserves, a lot of goals, and then you've come in.
That season when Peter Reid ended up getting the sack, I'd gone on loan to Bradford that year. I did all right. I'd scored a few goals there. I was doing quite well, and I was sort of about to sign a season long loan when Peter Reid was sacked. He didn't have any plans to play me in the team. Obviously, I was desperate to be playing.
So were you about 18 or something then?
No, I would have been 21 then.
Right, okay.
So yeah, I'd been at Bradford, and when Peter Reid got the sack, then I came back because the new manager wanted a full squad back. So I came back then, and as you say, to replace Niall Quinn is impossible. And
you got paid out of position a lot, didn't you, on the right?
Yeah,
stuff.
Ended up that
must be horrible.
Right,
you've been waiting for your chance, and then you get in the team, and then you're like, go and do a shift on the right wing for us, mate.
Yeah, and we ended up, as you say, that season was a bit of a transitional period, and Peter Reid had gone, Howard Wilkinson came in. That didn't really work out. We had a lot of players that were coming to the end of the contract. There was a lot of financial instability at the club, where players, in the end, had to be sold the following season. So yeah, it was a real transitional season. I ended up playing right wing. I played left wing a couple of games. I remember playing Bolton away in the cup, and Mark Rossiter played right back, got took off injured after 5 minutes. I can't remember who came on to replace him. I mean, Darren Williams, he got then taken off injured, and ended up playing right wing back at Bolton with JJ Kotcher playing left wing. We actually ended up we drew the game. Kev Phillips scored. We beat them in the replay at the stadium.
And in the replay, Nicholas Medina yeah. played. I mean, why do you? I mean, as somebody, he was in a similar situation to you. Obviously, when he came, similar price tag, similar expectation, like obviously you'd set. And then, you know, why do you think that didn't work out for him?
Well, I think he was another player who came in the wrong time. Technically, I saw he was a good player, probably not strong enough to the Premier League. Yeah. And apart from that, he had players ahead of him like Gav McCann, Alex Ray, Stefan Schwarz, players with experience, you know, Eric Roy. So it was going to be so hard for him to be ahead of them. So he had to wait his chance. Obviously, he was at the club for a year and a half, I think, or two. And then obviously, he lost his patience.
I think people just,
going
because you've done so well, everybody just expected that he was going to come in and
I just think with Julio, he sort of had the an English mentality, an English work rate, and he just slotted straight into the Premier League. The style of play suited Julio's style of play. For all he was a talented player, a flair player, what I think isn't mentioned a lot about Julio is that he worked hard. He worked hard in training and worked hard in games, and that's another reason why Sunderland fans warmed him as they did, because they could see that he cared, they could see that he worked hard. And possibly Nico just didn't really, he didn't have that, not the mentality, just that wasn't his game. His game didn't suit the English
game. His body language probably was slightly different.
Yeah, he's a bit more laid back, it just didn't work out for him.
What's interesting is English football has evolved, Julio, a lot, but the Premier League particularly now, where you look at the Premier League now and clubs try to maintain possession a lot more now. They keep the ball a lot more. Do you kind of sometimes look and think, I wish people played like that when I came? Because it must have been a little bit frustrating for you coming in from Argentina in a culture where you keep the football to fullbacks who suddenly just launch the ball down the wing.
I think everything started changing here since we seen that fantastic Barcelona about five, six years ago. And obviously, you always have teams in here like Arsenal. They always try to, you know, play nice football. But obviously, when I was in Sunderland, it was a lot different. That's what we were talking before. You know, we have Quinny on front, flicking balls, holding the ball. Then we have Kevin Keenbine or whoever was playing on the right wing, crossing the ball. And that's what I used to ask to do as well, you know, getting near the box and cross the ball. But I used to enjoy that. It was slightly different than what I like to play, but you have to get used to. And to be a Premiership footballer, you have to get used to any kind of football. You know, we were saying before, Michael playing right wing. When you're a young lad, you're playing anywhere, don't you? You get a chance and you play like right wing, left back or whatever, as long as you play in the team, you know. That's the main thing.
It's weird, isn't it, when you think about all those players that we did have around that time who didn't make an impact or didn't play or made an impact and then left quickly. I mean, you mentioned Eric Roy there, let's say.
Great player, wasn't he?
Yeah, I thought he was excellent. Yeah, and why did he go? I mean, we only had him for a year.
Because I think the style of football wasn't the style of football he liked to play. It was more like a passing play with like a Xavi style, you know what I mean? But obviously then we have Alex and Gav McCann playing there. They were like two killers, basically, you know? But they used to do well there. And it was probably more helpful to have them two playing there than Eric Roy at that point, because the style of football we were playing.
I think the whole Premier League's changed now. Yeah, in the last 10 years, it's changed.
Even the English mentality. Again, you were talking about coaching badges off air and stuff, and I've done the basic ones, and it's just it's possession based now.
Isn't it? The whole game is because that's how you win football games. You look at all the top teams, and that's how they win games. You can press teams as Southampton did last season. We've seen it from Spurs earlier in the season, and they do that fantastically well. But for all, you've got to press the ball and work hard. Then when you get the possession of the ball, you've got to keep it. Me and Julio spoke on the way over here earlier, and Julio said that he'd love to play for Poyet because of the style of football that Poyet plays. Julio would drop straight into that because that's the type of player that he was.
It's like he slightly missed yeah. the ball.
It's good the way they do it. Like, they're trying to get the ball as quick as they come back, and then obviously when you get the ball, you need to rest. That is about taking advantage of resting, you know, passing the ball. And you see a lot of teams doing that now. You see Swansea doing, you know, they've been doing that for a long time. They're pressing high, and then when they get the ball, they're just trying to keep it. They don't go forward as soon as they get the ball. Yeah. They're trying to keep and find the right time to go forward. And it's nice to see teams doing that because I think it's more pretty, you know, to see teams play that kind of football.
Do you speak that? I mean, in the last 12 months, I guess we've had Scocco, Virginie, Otsari, you know, I'm doing that ignorant thing of going, you're from Argentina, you must know them, but obviously you're local, and surely somebody would have put you in touch maybe. I mean, did you speak to any of them? Did you try and sort of help them settle in, or?
Well, I spoke with them. I know Oscar Otsari, I know him from over there. The other two lads, I don't know him. I haven't spoke with them. I'm not sure who is doing that at the club. I'm not sure if the club have something to do that. I never got asked to do something like that. But I mean, from my point of view, obviously, I try to help them, especially Oscar, you know, who's looking for a house or doing this or doing that. Ask me about the city the best way I could, you know. But it's always nice to help someone, especially coming from abroad, you know, to settle here.
Is it disappointing that maybe that the Scotland one didn't work when they don't work out? I think it's a bit of a shame, isn't it, really, when they come over and don't settle in.
I think it's, honestly, I saw him, obviously, the last two seasons before he came to Sunderland playing over there in Argentina, and he was really good, you know, sharp, good, hitting the ball from outside the box very well, scoring a lot of goals. Something you need time, and, you know,
He wasn't prepared to wait, apparently.
Yeah. That's the problem, you know. Something you need, you know, it happened with Colocini and Newcastle the first 6 months of the first season. Yeah. Everyone was battling him, you know, he's too slow in this and that. He's probably, you know, been one of the best players for the last 5 years, you know, captain now in the team for the last 2-3 years. So some players need more than time than others. But, you know, some players don't like to wait, as you say. So.
Well, we could, as with when Bali was on the show the other day, we could go on for hours, but we can't. We've got homes to go to and stuff. We do a question of the week now, rattle through that.
Yeah. So the prize this week was...
Listen to Julio and Michael, you can help judge the winner for this. Gareth reads out the answers.
The prize this week was, it's a Hyde and Beast album, which is called Keep Moving. You can enjoy that at your leisure if you win. So keep an eye out as well, because we're sick of people entering and then not listening, not claiming the prize. So we're not going to announce the winner unless you contact us.
Yeah.
So if you're listening now, keep an eye out.
We won't be doing it on Twitter. You need to listen.
Yeah.
So, but if you're not listening, this message is pointless.
So. It is, yeah. It'll roll over. Actually, next...
tell the people who's not listening to listen. That's a new one, isn't it?
Good luck with that.
Next week, we've got a brilliant... Not this prize isn't any good, but I'm just saying we've got a pretty good prize next week in the form of FIFA 15 on the Xbox One, which were given by Game Washington. So thanks to them, and we'll mention that during the week. But yes, this week the answers, John Watson.
Question first.
All right, the question was if you could
one job.
I know. If you could basically a song or lyrics to sum up Sunderland. I'm surprised we didn't have more after the
Did you look on the Facebook ones as well?
I did. I've got them all down. So John Watson had a "Broke My Heart" by Saw Doctors. I don't know who they are, and I don't know this song.
Never heard of Saw Doctors?
No.
Have you not?
No. Paul Jake said, "You'll probably get this answer a few times. However, I can't help falling in love with you. Seems even more apt today." Lawmaster 77, "Run to the Hills." And we had two people, one on Facebook, Gavascu and Yanni on Twitter, which things can only get better.
Too obvious, that one.
Yeah, Paul Smith, "Embarrassment" by Madness. Rory Fallow said, in honour of how our fans react after a defeat, rip it up and start again. Tom Wilcox says, why does it always rain on me? Thomas Elliott, Pixies, where is my mind? I don't know what's going on with him there. Joe Broly said, heaven knows I'm miserable now. Chris Dixon, caught in a trap, can't walk out because I love you too much, baby. That's a reasonable one. David Parker, Chumbawamba, I get knocked down. Cy Curtin said he'd come up with his own, and he said, for F's sake, man, push out, you go on, got a score here, or out the door, man. Might have made that song up.
What?
And he's someone from Facebook.
I think
Facebook.
You need to say that written down for context, yeah. There, because that just sounded,
yeah,
bizarre.
Yeah, this is off Facebook. Aaron Prestard said, can't stand me now, the Libertines, until we teach Arsenal footballing lesson. David Angus, steps 5678. That's quite good though. And Leyburn Runner said, so you go and you stand on your own and you leave on your own and you go home and you cry and you want to die. The Smiths, massive lads fans in brackets, probably not. And I think the song must be called How Soon Is Now, so there you go.
Any thoughts? Any by the Smiths down there? Yeah, they're quite obvious and easy, yeah, easy ones from there, aren't they? I like the Travis, Why Does It Always Rain On Me as well.
I don't mind Rip Up and Start Again. I think that's what they've got to do. But there you go, I'll let you judge that one.
Julio, know. any?
Julio,
I prefer
not
to.
He's not convinced.
He probably couldn't understand what you were saying.
Yeah,
no,
sorry, yeah. I quite like the last one, Leyburn Runner, and his answer, the Morrissey song. Well, the Smiths song.
What was it again?
I think it's How Soon Is Now, but I don't know. The 5678 one's pretty good.
Yeah, that's... it doesn't sound nice, but
it's quite funny.
It's like gallows humour, that.
Yeah. Is that the winner,
I'm
then?
I'm happy with that, if you so.
Right, okay. David Angus, via the medium of the Facebook, steps 5678, congratulations, you've won. Get in touch with us.
It's important to be able to laugh at yourself.
Yeah, get in touch with us. Just send us a message on Facebook, or if you're on Twitter and you follow us and we don't know that, then send us a message or whatever, and we'll sort out your prize. And if you don't get in touch, it'll be rolled over to the following week, because as I say, next week we'll have FIFA 15 on the Xbox One courtesy of Game Washington, so we'll put the question for that out and how to enter and stuff like that in the next few days. We might make it a bit more, you know, promotion-y because of the level of the prize. You might have to do something for us to win that.
Right, well, judging off most of the answers, you see, that's the best one actually this week. Best answers, because we've had a couple of stinking weeks, haven't we?
I know.
Pulley socks. We don't want to push the listeners too far. Right, okay, that's all we have time for this week. Make sure you listen to Winter Light on Thursday as well, where we'll talk Arsenal. Michael will be back with us then.
What about the flat? Sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah, well, I'll come to that at the end.
It just wasn't written down on your outro.
Don't worry about that. It's logged in again. Where am I? Right. Hope that wasn't too depressing. The flat now will come up. So if you hate that, now's your time to turn it off now. Right. Thanks for listening. Over and out.
Last week on The Flat, Paolo Di Canio left a trail of destruction after a short stay in the property, leaving Alan and Steve scratching their heads once more. Surely it's time for a less volatile option.
Well, you know, obviously Paolo was a disaster. We hadn't expected the ego of the men to be so disruptive. We thought he might bring some personality to the place, well, that's for sure. But the clash of cultures was just too much, you know. We ended up getting our backsides kicked. We've had to have a rethink, and it's time for someone more genial to come into the fold. In my view, absolutely. Al and I had a long chat about it, and he agrees.
It was clear we were struggling with Paolo early doors. We thought we had the strongest possible candidate, but in the end, we was let down by the landlord who didn't vet him properly. But we'll be trying our best to rectify the situation. Steve thinks he's found the perfect solution.
Niall, how's it going?
Wow, what a fantastic looking flat. Really, the pleasure to be here. What a wonderful moment this is for all of us. Look at Alan over there in the corner, sitting there having a fantastic time. Absolutely brilliant.
Nice to see you, Niall.
Absolutely phenomenal to see you again, Alan. It's such a fantastic situation to be in here, you guys, you know. What a wonderful opportunity for us three to forge an understanding and bring some smiles to people's faces. It's a real thrill for those supporters. Look at them there. They're having a fantastic time. What a wonderful, great day this is for us.
What supporters?
The fantastic Trevelyan supporters there. Look at them. What a great day out for them. Having a wonderful time. Brilliant.
Settle down, Quinny lad. Let's have ourselves a cup of tea and 8 or 9 biscuits.
Tea. Biscuits. What a wonderful day this has turned out to be. Fantastic.
Niall's overwhelming enthusiasm is in stark contrast to that of the hypercritical Di Canio. Steve suggests the lads sit down for a game of Monopoly in order to break the ice.
You know, it's important to integrate the new lads. Without a doubt, there's nothing better than a good old-fashioned game of Monopoly to do that in my view, that's for sure. Mind, I'm still a bit bitter about the time I had Park Lane and ended up being forced out by the boy Alex. He had Mayfair and we couldn't do the deal. In the end, I caved in. It's brutal up there sometimes, you know, to be hounded out by your own flesh and blood. It's tough to take, but you move on.
The game begins. Niall declines the invitation to play, but is very keen to watch and comment. We was straggling here. I was only given a chance to bring in two stations. I had both utilities and I lost electric and water. Wasn't quite the same without it. I tried to bring in Vine Street, but we couldn't do the deal and I got stuck with old Kent Road.
Come on, Alan. Roll the dice.
7. That's chance.
What a chance this is for Alan here. A fantastic opportunity.
It's a get-out-of-jail-free card.
What an absolutely wonderful move that is. An incredible moment for Alan there. No doubt he'll be needing that later on. And look at it. What it means to him. Look at his face. What a wonderful moment. He's having a fantastic time here.
Oh, I'm in a spot of bother here, that's for sure. I've blown all my cash on average streets and haven't got a full set yet. Come on, Steve, come on. 11! Community chest!
There he goes, look at the delight on his face as he passes go and collects his reward. A wonderful moment for him. Fantastic! Game on!
Do you think you're getting a bit overexcited there, Niall? Obviously you're a passionate man, but both you and I know how quickly things can go pear-shaped up here in the northeast, especially over at Sunderland. You've got to calm down.
It's impossible not to get excited. What a fantastic day out it's been for those supporters over there. Look at them there. They're having a wonderful time down there. Look at their faces. Absolutely fantastic.
A quick word, Steve. I think Niall is really struggling with his head. Maybe he's a bit tired from the week.
Well, you know, Alan, I think you're absolutely right. There's no doubt about that. The lad has gone wrong.
Who are these supporters he keeps mentioning? The only supporter I see around here are the 52 fares and screaming Geordies.
I know, Alan. He's lost the plot, that's for sure. He's going to have to be moved on. We're certainly not the best at picking flatmates. We got our backsides kicked. But we'll dust ourselves down and continue the search.
It falls on Steve to break the news to the big Irishman.
Listen, Niall, I take no pleasure in this. Even though you caved in over at Sunderland when I was hounded out. But we're going to have to ask you to go. It's just not working out as we'd hoped. I know what it's like to be booted out, as you well know. You did the booting. But you'll bounce back. Look at me. Look at the job I've done down at Hull. They don't know what they're missing up here now. But it's time for you to go, that's for sure.
Well, this has been a fantastic opportunity for me, but I fail to take it. No doubt when the next one comes along, I'll grab it with both hands. I'll roll up my magic carpet and be on my way. Good luck!
Well, he's a lovely bloke, that's for sure.
Yeah. I'll get on the phone to Graham Carr, see if he can unearth us a gem. Otherwise, we could be straggling for the rent.
I'll send a few faxes. We've got a few irons in the fire. Best to keep your powder dry, no doubt about it.
Once again, Alan and Steve fail to secure the right man for the job. Who will be next? Find out next week on The Flat.